I'm certainly not going to. I'm actually. I have a late flight, so. But you can leave as you need to. Stay if you want. That sort of thing. Yes, Father.
When you said that about the prevalence of postpartum depression, it just suddenly struck me. I never thought of it before. That as soon as a woman has a baby, we tell her don't come back to church for 40 days. What about that?
I think in the Orthodox way of life, particularly for converts, a great deal of explaining has to be done around the level of what we would regard as ritual purity issues. And one way around it, which I found to be fairly effective, is to teach women, particularly who have just had babies, that we don't bar them from church because they're impure in any sense. We bar them from church because they are too sacred. This is a very important Jewish theme, which has enormous implications for us and does not come readily to the Western mindset. We assume that impure means dirty. There's nothing dirty about a woman giving birth at all. There is something very, very sacred about a woman giving birth. And that's where you need to put the focus.
It seemed like she would need more attention, especially if there's no extended family.
Yes, although if you want to keep the rules and she doesn't actually come to church, mainly because she should be too busy looking after the baby to do so, because that's her main divine function at that point, is to look after the baby. There's nothing which bars you from going to visit her. And I think that should be something which we, all of us as pastors, would need to take very seriously indeed. But postpartum depression, I think childbirth and so on, has enough written into it, which is complicated, without going in the direction of postpartum depression, which can make it terribly, terribly involved. And involves resentment on the part of the husband, who, after all this time, you know, may find himself looking after the newly born child because she doesn't feel like it or whatever. And the tensions can be absolutely enormous. And if the family at that point doesn't get help from their pastor, then the pastor is failing them very badly. Yes, Father.
Thank you so much for expressing that. Several years ago, I had the grace or blessing of being in a bit in a liturgy in Asheville, North Carolina. And a woman came up to him before the liturgy and said, "Sayyidina, please forgive me, but I can't be here for liturgy. I have to be at home. So pray for me, please, and I'm terribly sorry. I need your forgiveness." And he said, "I forgive you for what?" And she said, "Well, my mother is ill at home, and I left the children so I could be here, but I have to go home and take care of my mother and the children as well." And he said, "Well, you don't need my blessing. You're doing a holy work.
Right.
Go ahead and do it."
Yeah.
That had to be one of the most liberating things I ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
Love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It actually comes from our Jewish roots, and our roots are Jewish. Whenever we don't that women are in general freed from the necessity to keep the commandments which are time based, because women are deemed already to be full-time co-creators. And I mean, in certain of our cultures, in Greece perhaps, and amongst certain Arab populations, it doesn't come out like that. It comes out as in some form of male chauvinism.
Right.
But it's up to us, to the pastors, to redress that
Absolutely.
Balance. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, Father.
Father Miletus, on the issue of getting out of the head and into the heart, in your book, when you speak about the prayer of the heart, you discuss the method of the Jesus prayer using intervals between the words and allowing for some silence
yes.
between the words. I must confess that's the first time I have heard that, but I'm intrigued by that method. Could you speak to that?
Did everybody hear what Father... Father asked about something I've written in the book about using the Jesus prayer with silence in between words. I've already spoken to someone about that this morning, and that someone told me that for him it wasn't a very good thing to do. And so this is only a suggestion. It comes really from Father Sofroni by way of Bishop Callistus. This is a way to, you know, I think it's Bishop Canossos who says, sometimes we use the prayer to find inner silence, and sometimes we use inner silence to find the prayer, and it doesn't really matter which, because it's actually the same thing. This particular way of using the prayer involves using the prayer very slowly, and I usually advise people to cut it down to perhaps three or four words. For example, Lord Jesus, have mercy, because otherwise the attention is strung out longer than it can do. And you say the words on the out breath. Usually, the breathing is a very important part of the Hesychast tradition, but there are no rules and regulations about it. If we get dogmatic about breathing techniques, then all we've done is invent a technique. And Orthodoxy doesn't do techniques. So, I'm going to give you a technique without giving you a technique, but nevertheless. If you say the prayer, if you cut it down to three or four words, say, and focus, obviously you're trying to focus here, and on the out-breath you say the first word, Lord, and breathe very slowly, and then you breathe in again, and then there's silence for the second breath, and then on the third breath, Jesus, which you listen to attentively, and then you listen to the silence, have mercy, silence. This has a very calming effect on people who are excitable or who are finding it difficult to settle. I think we have to admit, using the Jesus prayer, you have to have a little period at the beginning there where you simply settle down. We do the Jesus prayer together in church for two periods of 20 minutes a day at the monastery. This is apart from cell rule. We use the Jesus prayer instead of the ninth hour, instead of the midnight office. And then on one day a week we get together and this is an optional thing, where we say the Jesus prayer together in silence. The way we do it, incidentally, is not the same as they do in Essex. In Essex, at Father Sofroni's monastery, the leader of the says the prayer out loud for everyone. I have to say I don't particularly like that, because one of the factors is that everybody's rhythm is slightly different, and to use somebody else's rhythm doesn't seem to be very productive. So in our, we use a Valam suggestion which a Metropolitan brought from Valam to our monastery, which is that the leader says the Jesus prayer three times out loud, then we go into silence, and then at the end of the period, after 20 minutes, after an hour, the leader says the Jesus prayer again three times as a sort of the concluding. But in the middle, each one prays in silence in his own rhythm. And I would say that that allows for a great, much more divergence than the method used in Essex. I can take 20 minutes to settle down, depending on the day and how I'm feeling. So sometimes those 20 minutes is a sort of pretty much a complete waste of time, because I haven't got where I'm going by the time it's ready to stop. And there will be days like that. But this particular way of using the prayer, in this very slow, attentive method, you have to be very, very attentive, where you listen to the words and then you listen to the silence between the words, I find to be quite effective.
suggested in a place of silence, where
At least in a silence. Well, outer silence is going to isn't that crucial, although it is to be commended. In Manton, the most noise we usually hear is the other trees in the wind, except when the dogs are barking, and Dika has quite a strong voice, so. But the crucial silence in the Jesus prayer is the inner silence. Yeah. Yes, Father.
Are there any cautions for introducing the Jesus prayer at parish with a group of your congregation? Anything to watch out for? Not being an expert myself, would you know there's a limitation for introducing something I might do?
Well, let's have a look. First of all, Jesus' prayer is essentially private prayer. So it should not replace liturgical worship in a parish because you have little enough time for liturgical worship. I have read a great deal, mainly in Russian, but in some Greek sources too, of people who warn about the dangers of using the Jesus prayer. And in Russia it's quite fashionable to stress how dangerous the Jesus prayer is if you're not in touch with a spiritual father. I wonder sometimes what those dangers might be. Because if we're actually talking about prayer, then, you know, you put yourself in the hands of God, how dangerous can that be? In the sense of it is a terrible thing to fall into the hands of the living God, yes, indeed. But in terms of could this person actually cause themselves psychological damage by using the prayer, I would have to say that as long as they're talking about any phenomena that arise, and they're usually things that people might want to get excited about, seeing lights and hearing sounds which aren't there, and having a feeling of grandeur or smallness or various other things that any spiritual father worth his salt will simply say, don't pay any attention to that, that really doesn't matter. And I've had, and this is particularly true with Russians, I've had people who become sort of devoted to these phenomena and count them as the real thing, and they're not the real thing at all. They're just they're the mind's attempt to block the process of prayer in almost all categories. You know, if the Archangel Michael does appear to you, just blow him away and carry on praying. And so long as there's someone there to keep, you know, within that sort of sanity, I think to talk of grave psychological damage is simply what people are sometimes trying to do is to up the importance of this form of prayer and say, well, this, you know, you have to take this really, really seriously. Well, that it may be true to a certain extent, but I've yet to meet anyone in a mental hospital that's simply there because they use the Jesus prayer. And there are no experts in the Jesus prayer. I talked to another group last night, and I'm not sure what I've said to whom now. But you know, Metropolitan Anthony made a very big deal about the fact. Bloom made a very big deal of the fact.